This episode of the Thai Capital Millionaire Podcast was brought to you by Black America, Inc., A $1 trillion Nation, by A.R. Morton. Black America, Inc. is a piece of literature that details and illustrates the socioeconomic solutions that Black Americans can implement in their communities today. Whether it be being captains of our own industries, creating our own political parties, or just learning how to strengthen our overall health and wealth, Black America, Inc. is what Black Americans and Americans in general need to get to the next level in 2017 and beyond. For too many years, we have been talking about the problems and not the solutions. For too many years, we have been pointing fingers at each other without talking about the solutions. This is why Black America, Inc. is important. If you're ready to build yourself up and rebuild your community, head on over to Amazon.com and order your copy of Black America, Inc., A $1 trillion Nation.
This is the Thai Capital Millionaire Podcast, Episode 15. My name is Thai Millionaire, also known as Charles Oglesby. I'm the founder and director of Thai Capital, the investment club, Todd Acquisitions, which is our real estate investment club, and Todd Ventures, which is our crowdfunded venture capital firm. Thank you all for tuning in. The purpose of this podcast is to share the stories of successful African-American investors and business owners so that people can see that business and investing are the true keys to financial success and generational wealth. Tonight, we have a very special guest. It's actually a book that I just recently finished. The title is Black America, Inc. If you follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, anything you've seen me post this book. Tonight, we actually have the author, so that's pretty awesome. It's one thing to read the book, it's another to read, have a conversation with the person who wrote that book. So with that, I want to introduce A.R. Morton, also known as Doe Dubes.
Yes, yes. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Doe Dubes, a.k.a. A.R. Morton, is on the line. I'm excited. Big fan of Todd Millionaire, big fan of Todd Capital. I'm a member of the investment club, very happy with my decision to jump on board. Hotep Nation, of course, is affiliated with Thai Capital, so it's a beautiful thing, man. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing that I told people, and like the best part about what we're doing is it's like one organization working with another organization. So, I mean, we get that one, two, three people, but it's like when you start leveraging up and creating strategic alliances, that's how you can really take major moves in business. So I appreciate you guys, and definitely.
Thank you, man. Absolutely.
So talk to us about the book.
Oh yeah, man. So Black America, Inc., A $1 trillion Nation. It's actually next to my children, my wife, and my garden. That is the top accomplishment that I was able to achieve. It was very inspiring to me just seeing the learning about the economic activity of Black America, whether, you know, good or bad. It started with me just learning knowledge itself and things of that nature. And along that path, I happened upon two people, Dr. Claude Anderson and Dr. Boyce Watkins. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the $1 trillion a year that Black Americans spend. And I coupled that with the Nielsen Company consumer reports and just looking at the income levels of Black American households and things that we spend money on. Like the Nielsen Company, like, literally studies everything that we watch, that we buy, that we wear, you know, what we eat and all of these things, and they track it. And I was, you know, I saw myself in a lot of those stats, and it just made me, you know, have a better understanding of the things that we can get accomplished with that $1 trillion. You know what I mean? Like $1 trillion, like like, just even as a concept, I couldn't even wrap my mind around that much money. And then all I did was just use simple math and to break down, like, what could we do as a community, as a, you know, as an entire nation of people, what could we do with that money? And I remember it was an infographic that Dr. Boyce Watkins had made, and he was saying, like, this is what we could do. We can buy 1,000 NFL teams. We can put 10,000 or 100,000 kids through school or something like that every year, like, for like tuition free type thing. It was so many things that we could do. So just those four or five bullet points turned into me doing research and then turning that into an entire book. So that's Black America, Inc., man. It's all about solutions. It's all about, you know, things that we can do today with our checks, with our money. And, you know, that's why I'm so proud of it.
Yeah. It was great to me because, I mean, that's one thing that I've always harped on is you always hear people say we don't have the money. But then when you start looking at all the places that we do have the money, it's not a matter of us not having the resources. It's just putting it in the right place. And so what I like about your book is you walk through people and you show them all the places that we can do it. But also, I think you just alluded to this, is you look at people who have already done it. So you look at stadiums or you look at teams and you say, okay, this is how much it costs. This is how much money we have. And so it is attainable. It is feasible.
Exactly. That was like one of the greater examples from the book was like the Barclays Center, right? The Barclays Center costs $1 billion. You know what I'm saying? And when you're talking about versus $1 trillion, that's a drop in the bucket. You know what I'm saying? Like if we wanted to, we could house our own stadiums, or we can use that money to, you know, rent out the Staples Center, rent out Barclays for our own, you know, sports teams and stuff like that. Because as we know, man, we're the seat fillers when it comes to displays of athletic ability. They come there for LeBron James. They come there for Stephen Curry. They come there for the black players. Mm-hmm. So if we started to use that use that as leverage, like LeBron James, once he retires, actually owns a team, not just a coach or, you know, something like that. If he actually owned a team, these kids coming out of college, they would much rather want to play for a LeBron James team than some, you know, random white guy or something like that. You know, it's not to say that these guys don't do a good job. You know what I'm saying? It's just that it's more familiar. You're getting real life experience being taught to you. You know, a lot of these guys that were owners or coaches or whatever, they either, especially the owners really never even been in the sports, but you have somebody that was in sports since a child, you know what I'm saying? Coaching and owning teams like that, it's just, you know, it just hits home a little bit harder, and people would definitely want to be under those organizations. So yeah, you look at the projects and the things that's already happened, you look how much it costs, and then you size that up into what's possible and what's not possible. And honestly, just throughout me making the book, it wasn't too many things that weren't possible. I mean, in the book, I was talking about buying our own airports and our own airlines. Like, we can buy anything that we want. We can make anything we want happen. You know what I mean? We just have to do it.
Yep. Another thing that I really liked about the book is, and this stands out to me just because I've said it, I don't know why it doesn't resonate with anybody, but you have chapter 12 or section 12, you're talking about the housing budget. And one thing that I like is that you said something along the lines of the home is like the foundation of the economy. It should be run like a financial institution. And
right, yeah.
And so you have all these different income sources coming into the same household. And, I mean, it makes perfect sense, but for some reason, people just can't get over that hump.
Yeah. I always say that. I was like, you got to, you know, run your household, you know, like a bank, and you run your family like a business. You know what I'm saying? It just makes it better. Like, for instance, I was on my other podcast. I have two podcasts, and one of them, I was actually talking about just, you know, having meetings with your family. You know what I'm saying? They call them family meetings or whatever. Talk to your family, you know, about the expenses. If you have like older children in your house, like 16, 17, 18, you know, maybe put them in charge of a bill. You know what I'm saying? Not to say that if they fall short that the bill's not going to be paid, but just to show them and give them more acumen on paying bills and running a family. And it's like, once you start focusing and aggregating your household income, and you treat it as if group economics, basically, like the husband, wife, maybe another adult in the house or something like that, you know, those principles are going to apply in and outside of your home. So if you master that inside the home, trying to convince people or trying to talk to people and educate people to do it outside of the home will be much easier. Like, I mean, based upon my book, I'm now consumer debt free, no credit card debt, you know what I'm saying? And of course, student loans are there, but as far as consumer debt in that sense, I'm debt free. So just doing those things, like me and my wife were able to save thousands of dollars. You know what I'm saying? Doing those types of things, it just strengthens your household, and then it can translate and strengthening your community. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So for the people that don't know, because I mean, reading the book, essentially what you did is you kind of created a black owned and operated alternative for every element of life. So can you kind of run through those, just kind of give people the general idea of all the things that you proposed?
Oh, well, in the book, we were, you know, like I said, we have the food section. And it's so crazy. It's like with me, and I get that we're going to actually talk about it later in the episode. Like, one of my favorite rappers is Spitter, right? So what he does, he just records the music and just gives it out to the people who doesn't listen to it. Mm. So I read, you know, all throughout me writing the book, you know, of course, I was reading, editing, you know, proofreading and all that other stuff. But now that it's out, I've just been letting people ingest it and read it. So forgive me if I don't remember every section in there. But it was, like I said, food, transportation, finance, politics. What else was there? So many. There's so many things that I remember that I can't remember. remember right now, but it was just a plethora of things that pretty much are the framework of what America is about. You know, making sure our housing is straight, you know, going into real estate. So buying up the block, buying up the neighborhood, buying up the city, if we can, you know what I'm saying? Like all of those things, I just feel like if we centralize it from the black dollar, we could dominate, man. And that's pretty much what it is. We're just trying to basically dominate and, you know, make sure our great grandkids are straight. And once we start honing in on these industries, like I said, having our own freights, our own airlines and airports, our own restaurants with, you know, the rooftop gardens or the backyard gardens. So that cuts costs with, you know, food, because as people know, restaurant owners, that one of their biggest expenses is inventory, is food. You know what I'm saying? So we start doing those things and start working with each other, like a community garden. We'll, you know, have a contract with a local restaurant, locally sourced food. You know, that's it, just double promo. So the restaurant owner will say, oh, we get our food from such and such farm. And the farmer would be like, well, we're supplying such and such restaurant. Those types of relationships are amazing. So it goes into media as well. Like I said, we were talking about sports. It goes into pretty much everything about American life. And when black Americans start to, you know, take control of those industries for their people and, of course, everybody else, because we're not trying to discriminate from, you know, anybody. We do business with everybody, Asian, white. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, when it comes to that. But what does matter is that black people are at the head of these things, that we're, you know, pulling the reins and we're taking control of our own destiny and not allowing outside or external bodies to dictate how we live our lives. Yeah.
So can you tell us what HOTEP is?
Well, HOTEP, just the short answer, is just a frame of mind, man. It's an ideology. You know, I know a lot of people look at it like it's a cult or something like that, or we're like some type of fringe hate group, or they try to call us the black alt-right and all of this other stuff. HOTEP, honestly, you know, that's coming from the HOTEP camp. All you have to do to be HOTEP is just take the hate out of your heart, period. We don't hate white people. We don't hate black people. We make fun of all races based upon their grown adult decisions that they're making, and that's just what life is about. But yeah, our ultimate goal is world peace. But HOTEP, for me, is self-sufficiency, knowing yourself, loving yourself, building yourself up, and then using those skills that you did to, you know, build yourself up to transfer that into the community. So you learn, you know, for instance, I'll give you a perfect example. I went plant-based based upon the health benefits of not eating meat and then increasing my intake of fruits and vegetables. So that turned into me, you know, influencing my household. And that turned into my household influencing our friends and family, which would, you know, of course, be our community. So, you know, that's what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? And it's very important that we start with self. And that's what HOTEP is about, just starting with self. You know what I'm saying? You know, people say black supremacy, white supremacy. In my mind, and, you know, and that's the way things work, is self-supremacy. If you master yourself, you can conquer the world.
That's cool.
So that's HOTEP.
Cool. So, I mean, circling back to the book, these questions are kind of interrelated. The first question is, why did you write the book? And then what's your goal with the book?
So, like, you know, I touched on it a little bit, just, you know, learning about myself and the community, you know, black America overall. And then, of course, Dr. Claude Anderson, and just, you know, seeing people, you know, since the beginning of Black Lives Matter, just always harping on the problem, white supremacy, racism, oppression, you know, all of these things, like, you know, how are we going to stop this? How are we going to stop that? And if we just could do this, if we could do that, if we can get white people to do this or whatever, I'm just like, man, like, you know what I'm saying? It was just overwhelming hearing the problem over and over again. So in the beginning, I was just as emotional as everybody else. I was saying, fuck Whitey. I was, you know, all about dismantling all of this other stuff. But then, because of the type of person I am, essentially just who I am, if I'm complaining about a problem or if I'm upset about something, I want the solution. See, a lot of these people, they make money off of the problem. You know what I'm saying? These paid protesters and stuff like that, if there was nothing to protest about, they wouldn't get paid. So they're banking on. I'm not saying that they, in their hearts, want somebody to get killed by the police, but they know as soon as somebody does and it makes major news outlets, yeah, they're going to be commissioned by George Soros and all these other people, and they're going to get paid. I remember I was reading articles where they were getting paid between $1,600 and $2,000. You know what I'm saying? So, of course, you're going to be on that because in your own little way, that's your solution for your economic problems. But that's not going to... Yeah, so like I was saying, I was seeing everybody, you know, complaining. I'm like, man, I only complain or I only get mad at the problem or, you know, initially because I want the solution. You dig what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to become a paid protester. I'm not trying to be one of these people that do these speeches against the white man and all that other stuff. I'm good on that. I actually want my people to win. And the things that I started to look up, like once I found that $1 trillion, I'm like, okay, what happened with that? How are we doing that? And Claude Anderson saying that black people since, you know, 150 years ago, we owned 0.1% of the nation's wealth. And then 100 years later, we still only own that much. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, racism and all of the other stuff aside, because that stuff does happen. It did happen and all this other stuff. What can we do today? And, you know, that's where it all boiled down to economics. Every problem, you can't name one problem in the black community, whether it be domestic violence, bad education, you know, interactions with the cops, the fact that we have, you know, dirty cops in our communities and all this other stuff. All of that stuff goes down to economics. Most dirty cops, only do this dirty stuff because they're not getting the wages that they would like. So they're cutting deals with drug dealers and all this other stuff. And the drug dealers are only out there because the economic opportunity in this community is you know, far in between, because there is no black men and women in this community that can give them a job at 13 and 14 years old, keep them off the streets and all that other stuff. So everything boils down to economics. So I was like, okay, what can I do? You know what I'm saying? I'm learning this stuff. I'm learning saving and investing and stuff like that. I'm getting hip to people like Top Millionaire. I'm reading his tweets. I'm getting inspired. I'm looking at the media that he's ingesting. I'm reading that type of stuff. And everything from all of the stuff that I was reading, the main thing was economics and being able to be, you know, self-sufficient and having self-accountability. Meaning that if you win, when you win, it's your fault. You know what I'm saying? Or it's your thing that, you know, you achieve that. And when you lose, it's your fault. And that's what you made happen. So I'm like, okay, a book. You know what I'm saying? You know, the thing is, another thing that nudged me, I was listening to a podcast and this guy was going off. And he was saying, man, if you don't have a book, I don't want to hear from you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're not, I don't want to hear from you if you haven't written a book when it comes to societal or, you know, community talks, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Or things like that. And you think about all of the greats, they do have books, even if you don't agree with them. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They have books. They put pen to paper and they publish something to always be in the zeitgeist, to always be out there. Because even 20 years from now, somebody, you know, a child or somebody that wasn't even born yet is going to pick up my book and be like, oh, wow. Yep. This is, and all of those things, they're not just in the moment. You know, like a lot of these other podcasts and other media outlets, their stories are based upon what happened in the past 7 days. Mm-hmm. I am talking about what's been going on for hundreds of years. I mean, at least 100 years and in so many decades. And this is what we can be, you know, can be doing. So that's what made me, you know, want to write this book. And, it, you know, I started early 2016 and I finished writing it in November. I finished writing it about the middle of October. You know, I did all the proofreading and editing, me and my wife. And, you know, I hired a couple of people to help me out. And I released it November 18th, 2016.
So how about, like, how long was that, do you say?
I started like brainstorming about the book in about February. So from February to November. So what's okay. that? 2 to 10 is what, 8, 9 months. Yeah.
That's cool. So, I mean, you kind of laid out the plan for everybody. You let people know what we can do. You let people know that it's attainable. So, I mean, what's the next steps? How do we implement that plan?
So, basically, I think bare minimum, we have to relocate our funds. You know, the reason why, you know, when you talk about the circulation, they say, you know, the Jewish community circulates their money, you know, 30 times or something like that. Then you go down to white, then you go to Hispanic, then you go to Asian, or, you know, I think it's Jewish, Asian, white, Hispanic, and black, as far as like the general races out here in America, right? Mm-hmm. And that circulation is due to where their money goes as soon as they get paid. Now, when you factor in things like direct deposit, if you have a direct deposit inside Wells Fargo, TD, Bank of America, that's the reason why your money is not circulating. But if you start relocating your money and putting them in black-owned financial institutions, whether it be banks, credit unions, investment clubs like Todd Capital, things like that, that money will circulate now. You know what I'm saying? Way more than it would, because we are, you know, basically putting our money in other people's pockets, you know what I'm saying, to manage it, because they feel like, or these, you know, we feel like they can better manage our money. Mm-hmm. That's why our money is not, you know, staying in our community. So the first thing that we have to do, everybody under the sound of my voice, relocate your money. Even if you have, you know, even you, you know, you big Wall Street guys who have, you know, million dollar accounts and stuff like that, even if you don't extract all of your money out of those big banks, please contribute some wealth into these black owned financial institutions. That's where all of our hedge fund managers, that's where all of our money managers and stuff like that can be able to use this money to start building, you know, developments in our communities and things of that nature. You know what I'm saying? We throw all our money in the churches and all that other stuff. Like, let's start putting them inside Tide Capital. Let's start putting them inside One United Bank. Let's start putting them in all these places. You know what I'm saying? That way we can have more assets in the community and use that as leverage to, you know, purchase and own and control industries. It's one thing to have it. It's another thing to own it. It's a whole different thing to control it. So we have to master those three things. And the first thing that we have to do on the simple level is to direct deposit inside of our black owned financial institutions.
Because I want to touch on this, I mean, before we go into the next subject, because I think this is powerful. And on one of these pages on the Kindle, it's kind of unique, but you said the more people that enroll and open bank accounts at black owned banks, the more assets that bank can acquire, which results in the manifestation of all things mentioned in this book. And I think that's key. And it's key because, I mean, as a finance guy, a lot of things are done with leverage. And so when you have a bank that has $1 million in accounts reserves, then they can lend out 9 times that. So if you have a black bank that has $1 billion in reserves, they can lend out $9 billion into their community. So it's like, then you start to take the money that we do have, that $1 trillion, and you start to multiply it. And then you start to really be able to make an even bigger dent. So that's one of the things that when I was reading, I was like, you know, this is great. I think the one other element we have to throw in there is that leverage aspect. And a lot of what I do as a finance guy, everything is leverage. We never pay money to do anything. If you see big construction deals, it's never their money. They might have the initial money, but it's always a construction loan, or it's always some sort of a refinance going on. So, I mean, at the bare minimum, I definitely agree. And that was one of my big pushes, is to get people invested in the black banks. Just because, I mean, it makes too much sense. And one thing I always tell people, like, is when you practice group economics, they're going to be people who are working on your behalf. And so it's like, I've found that if I call a black bank, they're way more helpful than if I call Citibank or Bank of America or even some other money lender. So it's like, I can bring a real estate investment deal to a black bank in Chicago. They don't know me, but they can just tell I'm black somehow. And I can tell they're black too. I mean, aside from the fact that I looked them up, but it's way more helpful. Like, you expect the kind of pushback that I get a lot of times when I call non-black lenders, but it's not there. So it's like, we're kind of doing ourselves a disservice by not funding our own institutions, because then we can't get ahead because we can't get the funding in the first place.
Right. And that's exactly the thing, man. I have an account with One United Bank, mm-hmm. and their customer service is, oh my God, is impeccable. I love it. They give you courtesy calls when you first sign up and make sure everything is okay. They ask you what were some things you didn't like. And I told them it was an honest conversation. There were certain things that I didn't like and there were certain things that I did love, but just a courtesy call, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And then even when you go to One United's website, they actually have multi-family unit loans that they're giving out. You know what I'm saying? That's perfect. Now, because you already know, you're clicked up with Jay Morrison and all these other people who are talking about multifamily. Like, they are saying that you should actually get a multifamily before you even get a single unit home, mm-hmm. because it's easier for you to transfer from a multi to a single as opposed to a single to a multi. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these types of, you know, One United is saying that we actually have a loan program where we're actually giving out loans for black people to buy a property. It was just that I wasn't eligible because I live in Philly, and they only do it for places that they have branches, which is Boston, Miami, and LA. You know what I'm saying? So people who are in those three cities, man, or even in those three states, go to One United, man. Those people that are actually giving out loans so you can actually be a landlord out here and start cash flowing. So yeah, absolutely. I feel like black banks are way more hospitable.
Yeah,
in that
one
sense.
Thing that is so funny, like I always tell my mom, like when I call One United Bank, I feel like I'm talking to my mom or I'm talking to my sister.
Yeah. Oh my God. They're so nice, man. Yep. They're so, oh man, you can just feel it. And that's where, you know, a lot of people, and especially in these days, they feel kind of ashamed of that. They try to make it seem like that's racism or that's discrimination. Like, nah, man, that's called identification.
Yeah.
They hear your voice and they identify with that voice because I may sound like her cousin. I may sound like her uncle. I may sound like her brother. You know what I'm saying? So it's family, man. At the end of the day, like, I just got to call it what it is. It's family. And it's nothing wrong with that because all these other banks do the same thing, man.
Yep, you know what I'm saying?
So people have to stop being so scared to be prideful in where you come from and who you, you know, come from on an institutional level, not just wearing T-shirts saying my blackness this or unapologetically black. Like, that's not enough.
If you really are unapologetically black,
stop being ashamed to doing business almost exclusively with your people at first, because we are the ones who we have to take care of each other, man. Group economics is group economics. We can't do it. Group economics can't work without the group.
Nope. So, and it's crazy because it, I always say this, like, and when white people get their degrees, they're not running back to black people to get black people to hire them. And so,
right, like, exactly.
Like, it just makes too much sense. I think that a part of it is that shame factor. You brought it on. It's like people feel like, and it's because they've been psychologically conditioned to think this way, they feel like anything that's African-American is inferior. And so they tend to kind of put whiteness on a pedestal, even to the point where you wear these My Blackness Matters, all those shirts. It's really just to the point of you're trying to convince them. It's not because you really believe it. You want them to think it because you think that they have the power to co-sign your blackness. If they say, oh, your blackness is good, then finally it's good enough. And it's never going to be like that. You shouldn't even aspire. Like, who cares? I walk around, I'm like, I don't care if you think I'm dope because I'm probably outranking a lot of people in this train, in this building. Like, it doesn't matter. And it's because I've just put in the time and the investment to becoming great despite what people think and knowing they're never going to give me the cosign in the first place. So
absolutely. Like, I'll give you an example. My aunt's husband, you know, he's deep in Wall Street, he's been in Wall Street for, you know, 20 years, black dude. And he was telling me, like, yo, once you get in these meetings, you actually see how dumb these people are. Like, they got there based upon, let's just call it what it is, group economics. Now, of course, we should have better vetting and better grooming and, you know, making sure the people that are in these boardrooms actually know what they're talking about. But you'll be surprised, maybe not you, but people listening, they'll be surprised about just how the average dude, you know what I'm saying, who just reads a lot, knows more than a lot of these suits that's in these offices. You dig what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So just stop being intimidated, man. The white man's ice is not colder, man. Nope. Ice is ice, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Stop feeling like you have to prove yourself to the white society, man. It's just never going to work. You know what I mean?
Yep. So we've talked about housing. We talked about finance. We talked about the banking industry. We talked about, let's talk about politics. In one of these, in the chapter, you were talking about how one thing that really stood out and I highlighted this is you said that the truth of the matter is that the two parties that we're taught to support are two sides of the same coin. And
facts.
When you think about it, it really is true, because if you kind of scale up and you say, okay, we have Democrats and we have Republicans, at the end of the day, no matter who wins, they're still going to hire their own. So it's like, it might seem like they're fighting and they go to work and they act like they're fighting, but then they go to the same bars and they have drinks with each other and they go to each other's events on the weekends. So it's like, we do have to build up our own, even in the sense of our own political parties, because a lot of times we get swindled by the Democrats or the Republicans and we get told certain things to get the votes, and then they get into office and we get neglected for another 4 years, no matter who the president is.
Yeah, absolutely. My cousin, and she's like a political strategist and things of that nature. And she was, you know, she's been on CNN, MSNBC. She's done the debates and stuff like that. And I actually just came from a panel discussion on a YouTube show. And the way it is, you know, of course, like, first and foremost, you know, black people have been basically brainwashing to voting Democrat for the past, like, 100 years anyway. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But what she was telling me is that, yeah, like, you think it's like a heated debate going on TV. And as soon as they yell cut, they're going to lunch. You know what I'm saying? You see pictures with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and Bill and all of that other stuff. Like, these people are doing their jobs, basically. You know what I'm saying? That's all it is. A politician is an occupation. You know what I'm saying? It's an occupation that does, you know, set policies and things of that nature. So I'm like, well, if that's the case, let's do that for our communities, because we already know local elections and local politics is way more important. It's way more impactful in the community than a national election. Like, I saw that throughout the entire time of Donald and Hillary. You know what I'm saying? It was red versus blue, blue tie versus red tie, like Bill Burr says. You know what I'm saying? Trump is the fascist and Hillary is, you know, the benevolent Democrat who's going to help and all these other things and all of that. And I even remember talking to you on my podcast where you were saying how, yes, the Obama administration and, you know, the Democrats, they push out a lot of, you know, social things, you know what I'm saying? And that makes us feel better, moral victories and all these other things. And that's cool. But at the end of the day, like you say, you're still broke. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's not really helping you. So the better thing to do is to create your own parties, or at the very least, create your own PACs. You know what I'm saying? Your political, I think it's called political action committees or something like that, to where you actually start funding your own agenda. Like even the word agenda now has a negative connotation to it. You know what I'm saying? It's not a bad thing. And, you know, it's simple as just coming together, you know, maybe 50 to 100 people in each community to come together, talk about what we need to get done, talk about the agenda, what needs to happen that's pertinent on our block and our communities and stuff like that, come together, pool our resources together, pool our money together, and be like, we're going to groom, vet, and, you know, fund a politician to speak on our behalf, whether they already being active or it's somebody from the community. Somebody like Jewel Jones, a young man out in Michigan, started as a councilman, and now he's a state rep. You know what I'm saying? So his community can come to him and be like, okay, Jewel, this is these are the things that we think are important. We need economic opportunities. We need to be able to open up this type of business. We need to open up these types of centers and programs and stuff like that. We have, 3,000 votes for you. If you do that, we vote for you, and you'll have our constant support, our funding, and all of that other stuff. Because even when I interviewed him on my podcast, the name of the game is dollars and doors. You got to go knock on these people's doors, talk to them, see what their agenda is, see what they need, and then ask for money, and then tell them, you know, reassure them that with this money, I am going to do what you asked me to do. And that's exactly why he moved up from councilman to state rep in no time at all, because he has the community's interests at heart. Like, he's an actual community person. He cares about cleaning up the streets. He cares about kids not having to bus from one side of the state to the other side of the state because there's no schools in between. Like, he cares about the older people. He cares about the youth. You know what I'm saying? He cares about the single mothers, the fathers, and things of that nature. So, yes, you know, we have to start grooming, vetting our own politicians to push our own agenda. Everybody else does it. Everybody else. And that's exactly why you don't see too many other groups complaining. You know what I'm saying? But blacks, you know, for some reason, or in their mind, for some reason, we just keep getting neglected and keep being looked over. You know what I'm saying? And we come second fiddle to the big, you know, the big PACs and things of that nature. So we just got to start using a part of that $1 trillion, you know what I'm saying, every year or every election cycle, however, you know, frequent that is, to, you know, fund our politicians to make things, you know, make things that we want happen.
Nice. All right. Last question before we start kind of getting into more general questions. This is the last kind of like content-based question, but in the chapter about science and technology, and what I liked about this section is you talk about funding our own kind of research centers, but also you talk about kind of something that I alluded to, and I think it's actually what stemmed this idea, is I kind of put this out there that we need to strive to be the first, not just the first black, something that's already been done. And I'm almost positive that's where this kind of came from, and so I want to thank you for that, because I think a lot of people took something from that. So they might not have known where the source was, and I didn't even remember where the source was, but it's true. So can you kind of talk about the importance of being the first movers and investing in research and kind of not just being consumers of technology, but being producers of technology?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Well, you know, first and foremost, black Americans use smartphones, I think 15% more than everybody else in the country. Black people consume, you know, the arts, you know, music, movies, things of that nature more than everybody else. And then even on the science tip, you know what I'm saying, we have to increase our STEM major occupancies. Like, we have to have more people in these STEM places, because honestly, that you have now, the politics of the science world is if you throw enough money at an institution, they'll conjure up the results that you want. So if you want to say, you know, drinking too much water is going to, you know, kill you or whatever, you're going to pay a group of scientists to run that to make sure it's, you know, good. Like, they even did that with cigarettes back in the day. They had advertisements saying doctors or dentists approve this brand of cigarette because it gives you that refreshing feeling in your mouth. Now, we know that just common sense that smoking tobacco and all the other stuff is extremely detrimental to your health, but you have doctors, you know, and scientists and things of that nature backing up the claims that this is the good cigarette. You know what I'm saying? So if we start being, you know, at the head of these research teams and things of that nature, and we start funding these things, we create our own science complexes where we have our own labs and we can go out and dig up things from the earth and understand what the minerals and the resources coming out of the earth is. We can, you know, start being ahead of the cancer research and stuff like that. And even in cancer, we already know, as far as people who, you know, live a more holistic life, we understand that everything that really encompasses the cancer is lifestyle based. You know what I'm saying? The foods that you eat, that the things that you watch, all of these things affect your health in a major way. So if we have our black people, you know, not our black people, we have black people, you know, funding and doing these research, we don't have to be the first black astronaut or the first black this. We are just the best astronaut in the game. We are the best scientists in the game.
That's when you control the bottleneck. That's when you get wealthy. You get wealthy when you control the innovation, because people have to go through you in order to get what you've created.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now it wouldn't be the first black. It'll be, they'll just be referencing our work. You know what I'm saying? The same way, according to John Hopkins University, according to Michigan, I think Michigan is one of the, like, the top research schools in the country. So according to our institutions, according to our universities and colleges that we, you know, funding our STEM programs and stuff like that, they'll be referencing us, not just in America, but throughout the world. You know what I'm saying? We can go to Africa, we can go to Asia, we can go to South America, we can go to Australia and all these places and start doing our own studies and bring that back home and be like, this is what we came on. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what we found out.
What's crazy about that is that, and I said this a while back, but we are creative people. Like, if you go on any website, you see that, like, we're creating the trends. We're creating what's hot. We're creating what people are laughing at. We're creating what people want to do. We make stuff hot, and I think you cited that in your book. It's like, we control what what American culture is anyway. So it's like, why aren't we using all that creative energy and all that creative, like, that creativity that we have in our brains to actually become wealthy? And to
we are the trendsetters of America. Like, they even, like, there's this podcast that I was listening to for years now. It's called The Cracked Podcast, and it's from crack.com, and they're big on pop culture, social commentary, via the lens of pop culture, movies, TV shows, music videos, things of that nature. And what they were saying is that back in the day, there was this movie called Wolfman. I think it's like Michael Douglas or Michael J. Fox or one of those dudes. And he became a Wolfman. He was just this nerdy dude or whatever, but he became a Wolfman or whatever. But once he became a Wolfman, he was dynamite at basketball. He was dynamite at dancing and all the other stuff. And it was just basically like a callback to him getting soul. You know what I'm saying? Him getting that blackness in him. Now he's crazy dope on the court. He can dance his ass off. He was just this little nerdy white dude, but now he got swag. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then now I have a whole thread right now where, you know, the title of it is like, we, you know, black people or black Americans, you know, run the economy. We're Kit Kat and Hamburger Helper and all these other major brands are jacking our slang and all the other stuff to sell. And these are billion-dollar corporations. We keep our finger on the pulse of what's hot in this country. If crop tops on men is hot, you know what I'm saying? That's going to be that's where Forever 21, H&M, that's what they're going to be investing in. Whatever black people think is lit, you know what I'm saying? We're going to be putting our money behind it. Like, even think about the sneaker. The sneaker, it was a athletic shoe at one point, but somebody put it under some dope jeans and a T-shirt, and now Air Forces and Jordans are fashion statements. Like, these are basketball sneakers. You know what I'm saying? You're supposed to sweat, crease them up, but now there's a whole culture, a sneakerhead culture, where you don't even wear them too much. You know what I'm saying? You don't even want to wear them out. Like, we make it cool, and that sneakerhead industry is pumping out billions. You feel me? Based upon our culture and our community cherishing our sneakers, washing them with the toothbrush and all that other stuff. So where now you actually have people making sneaker cleaning kits where they put a toothbrush, a little bit of bleach or a little bit of soap or something like that. Now they're making little kits and they're like $50. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? These are items that you could have got at Family Dollar for no more than $15 for everything. A bottle of bleach, a bottle of soap, a toothbrush or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Now that's what we do. Everything that we like or everything that we try or put out there in the zeitgeist or out there in the public, you know what I'm saying? They latch onto it and capitalize on it. Mm-hmm. And we have to start doing that. We can't keep being the never-ending cash cow and we're not even eating. You know what I'm saying? We have to start being at the forefront of all of our trends, all of the things that we make hot. You know what I'm saying? Beyonce needs to not be, or Beyonce fans need to not be so proud that she's headlining Coachella, because that's the first time that's ever happened. And Beyonce is damn near a billionaire. She should be creating the festivals. Yep. You know what I'm saying? She should be the one that, just like I was talking about with LeBron James owning a team. You know what I'm saying? It's dope that you're, you know, the highest paid athlete or whatever, but like, be the athlete that owns and controls things, because that's where the real wealth is, man. If these owners are able to pay you hundreds of millions of dollars, imagine what their checks look like.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
You got to be the guy signing the front of the check, not the back of the check.
So, I like that. I like that.
I mean, this was a great conversation, man. I mean, it was a great book. I really hope people get a chance to pick it up. Do you have
any other... honestly, yo, if Todd Millionaire tells me my book is dope, like, think about it. Like, when somebody, because in the finance world, man, I definitely take heed to y'all a lot that you say. I'm actually tuned into your podcast every time you drop. And I like that you just drop, like, you keep dropping, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I listen to that. So when somebody who is as financially and, you know, business minded and your acumen, and you can be like, yo, Black America Inc. is dope, that means a lot. There's no different if somebody's, you know, if Kevin Hart, you know, met his idol, and he's like, yo, and his idol's like, you know, if he got, you know, if Richard Pryor was still alive, and he met Richard Pryor, and Richard Pryor was like, you know what, man, you're one of the funniest people I've ever seen. That means a lot because of the expertise that he's in, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So for you to say that, man, I'm really appreciative of that, man. It lets me know I'm on the right track.
Cool. So do you have any other books that are coming out anytime soon, or that you're thinking
man,
about?
Yo, man, I'm going to make this a series. The next one is going to be... where I actually go back, you know what I'm saying? I go back in the past, where we're talking about the inventor of the fountain pen. You know what I'm saying? We're going to talk about the economic activity, the inventors, the businessmen, the entrepreneurs. Like, you put me on to the Prince of Darkness. You know what I'm saying? I'm putting him in the book. It's going to be talking about just all of the people from hundreds of years ago who were making these types of big moves coming out of Black America. That's, you know, nice. What I'm saying? So that's going to be the next book. And then I'm due the second edition of this book, because now that I have read more books like Thomas Sowell, you know, Basic Economics and all that other stuff, I'm going to add a lot more information that I learned from him, you know what I'm saying, into that book too. So the second edition is going to be lit.
That's cool, man. I think
absolutely
one of my goals is kind of like what you're doing in that book. I'm doing it more modernly, but I think that's one of the things that people really need to see. They need to see that no matter what era it was, there was always somebody who was African-American and successful in business and finance. And, I mean, that sounds like exactly what you're going to do, because people have to see that it's possible. They have to see that it was done.
Absolutely.
They can do it,
absolutely,
too. So it's like, if somebody could push through all the legalized segregation and all that stuff, slavery, all of the Jim Crow isms, and they can still become financially successful, and you don't have any of that going on, you have no excuses. Like, you got to figure out something. You have to blow up, because there's no reason. Like, your ancestors will be disappointed if you didn't take advantage of all the things that they fought for and all the things that they struggled through. So
exactly, man. I was actually an audiobook. I was listening to it, and dude was talking about how, like, they used to go to war, like, through publication. You know, I love that. Like, I love that Jeremiah Hamilton stood up and represented himself in court, mm-hmm, during, you know what I'm saying, during segregation, like, during the most racist times, and he's winning. Like, I ain't even gonna front even the bad stuff that he did. Mm-hmm. I kind of commend him just on having that gumption to do that, like, counterfeiting, and, you know what I'm saying? Like, they were saying that around this time, like, 40% of the circulating currency was counterfeit. Mm-hmm. Like, you really couldn't help but to have counterfeit money and all of this other stuff. So to be brave enough to face that stuff, and it just shows me that it's at any point of American history, Black Americans, with all of the institutional stuff, yes, all of that stuff included, you know what I'm saying? If we came together and just stood fast, you know what I'm saying, and just kept it going, man, because, yeah, man, they bombed Black Wall Street. They try to – they leave out the point when they actually rebuilt and thrived for 40 more years.
Exactly.
And it was – it really –
that's a good point, man. People like to say that they bombed it like that's the end-all, be-all. Every time I bring up that point, they say, "Oh well, they bombed it." I'm like, well, they rebuilt it, man. If you are doing something and they set it back, rebuild it and rebuild it bigger, better, and stronger.
Like exactly, it's not feel like when it comes to that, they have basically made the word or the term or the life of the struggle a black thing, and it's not the truth, yo.
Yeah.
Yes, when you hear the word struggle, you know, it's a bad thing that the first people that you hear or think about it, black people. It's like, yeah, we've had our hardships. Let's exalt or praise the fact that we did rebuild and thrived for 40 more years. Like, let's dig that part. That's the real ingenuity. That's the real black power. It's not the fact that, oh, we did this and as soon as we, that's their thing. Like, as soon as we try, they bomb us. Like, no, that's not how it goes, man. Yep. Yes, you're going to have adversities. And the thing is that black people, overall, we have to follow through. We have to defend ourselves. We can't just be these benevolent people and thinking the best of people who don't have our best interests at heart. It just can't be like that no more. You have to be wary of people who are not actively supporting you in some type of way. So you have to be able to defend yourself. Yeah. I'm not excusing these people for bombing Black Wall Street, but at the same time, yo, you're not a victim. If you're able to build up this entire community and make billions and billions of dollars, you have the ability to have a gunsmith and start creating your own artillery. You know what I'm saying? And hold yourselves down, man. And
probably
protect yourself.
Innovate what already exists. I think that one thing I always say is like it's not enough to build success. You have to protect your success. And so,
right.
I mean, even America. America has the greatest military in the world because it's the greatest power in the world. So they have to protect what they build because people are always trying to come and take from us what we have. So it's like, it's kind of naive for African Americans to think that they're the only people that get to build something of value and they don't have to protect it. Like,
right. Right. Just because I built it, I should just be able to get it. It's like, nah, like I was doing the research on like black musicians, you know, dating back to like Duke Ellington and all this stuff and how, you know, and it's not like I'm anti-Semitic, but at the end of the day, they were shady, you know, Jewish attorneys, businessmen, executives and stuff like that who were in their pockets. And it's like, you're a grown man, you're a grown woman. You don't let nobody finesse you. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Everybody wants to blame this or blame that. Like, nah, man, you let it happen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no reason that an entire culture of people can exploit in another entire genre of music. That's crazy. Yeah. Nobody fought back, or I'm not going to say nobody, but not enough people fought back. Nobody protected themselves. Nobody read the contracts. Nobody, you know what I'm saying? No black lawyers read these contracts. Nobody went over this stuff. Nobody warned you. Nobody told you to, you know, go independent instead of signing with this label and all this other stuff. Like, you have to be able to educate yourself. And that's the thing. That's one of the first things. And it was a hard lesson that I learned. It was like one of the guys used to get arrested all the time as a kid because I was doing stupid shit. But, you know what I'm saying? I remember I was getting arrested and I told the cop, like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was against the law. He was like, yo, your ignorance of the law does not excuse you from that. So yeah, your ignorance of contracts, your ignorance of somebody swindling you in a business deal, it's criminals are going to commit crime, yo. Like, they're going to finesse you. Finessers finesse. Mm-hmm. So you have to be there. You know what I'm saying? You can't be mad at a bear for licking the honey, man. Like, you just, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just what it is, man. So if that's the type of person that they are, you have to protect yourself from that at all times, no matter if they're smiling and giving you a handshake. People are dirty, and you have to stay clean, and you have to protect yourself.
Yep. And since you kind of brought up the whole going independent thing, I think it's a good time to start talking about currency. And the reason why I included currency in this is because you're somebody that can appreciate the rap, just kind of how his flow is, how his style is. And I mean, one thing that I think that I like about currency the most is that he's probably one of the most business-minded rappers that I've seen in a long time. Music has the power to influence what you do. And so, I mean, for me, it's like if I'm going to listen to some kind of music, I need to listen to something that's along the same wavelength as me. And every time I listen to currency, I learn something, or I get more motivated, or I pick up like a gem that I can just like throw out on Twitter. And so, I mean, even as I was riding home, I was just like, man, like even old currency that I heard, like I was listening to like the Smokey Robinson mixtape, and he was just spitting bars on there too. So, I mean, can you kind of tell us, like, I don't know, what's your take on currency? What's your take on maybe even getting other rappers to kind of go along that same route?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, the reason why everything that you just said, I agree with 1,000% is because I started listening to currency when I was a kid. You know what I'm saying? I was listening to him since he was with Cash Money and Young Money. And it's like, I'm listening to him at 17, 16, and now I'm 27. So it's like I've been listening to him for 10 years. And when you do that, you get to hear and see the extension of his career. Like, I remember, and I said this on another podcast, like, I remember when he was saying, like, before the rap even started, that, you know, he could only hear out of one headphone. Like, you know what I'm saying? But in that song, he's talking wealth, man. He's not just talking about material shit. And even when you listen to his interviews, he says, he looks at his jewelry and his clothes like, yo, this is all bullshit, bro. Like, this is all bullshit. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to get it. I got it. You know what I'm saying? But don't worry about the bullshit. Look at what I did to get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he even said in the showroom, I like nice shit and I know how to get it. Hustle, dumbass, is not rocket science or quantum physics. It's not. Like, it's dead ass. Yeah, you know what you want. You know what I'm saying? Get on task, fool. Trap to a trillion. You know what I'm saying? Yep. He told me to get on task. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like, what rapper is telling you to get on task? Like, you know what I'm saying? So he's always inspired me. And I really think that my independence, you know, knowing my worth and all of this other stuff, I got that from him. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Well, not just him, but I got a big chunk of that because I was listening to him since a child from him. You know what I mean? And it's like, he's one of the greatest influences and inspirations in my life. Like, I can't wait to meet him. Like, I know I'm going to meet him. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I can't wait. And he's just been, you know, so dope and just being independent. Like, he could have signed with anybody. Like, it's not even like, you know what I'm saying? He's some underground whack dude. Like, major labels wanted him. Like, imagine the type of balls you have to look at a contract and be like, $2 million, da 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 da. And he's like, nah, I'm good. Because of what the contract is saying. And this goes right back to the point that we were just saying. Like, you got to know when you're being finessed. It's going to sound good. You know what I'm saying? Them 360 deals sound good. We're going to give you this much money. We're going to do this for you, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, if they're willing to give you that, that means you must be worth 10 times that much. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So grind, man. Get it out the mud. And that's the main thing, the main takeaway from Spitta, man. Just get it out the mud because, like I said, I remember when he sold his 6-4. You know what I'm saying? I remember when he was going broke. I remember with the whole thing with Dame. I remember all of this stuff. And it's like to see him come out unscathed to where he bought the Wraith free and clear. He has a fleet. He has fleet insurance to where he has dozens of cars. And you know what I'm saying? It's just amazing. He now he's creating jobs because he's partnered up with Houdat's, which is a restaurant out there in New Orleans. They opened up a second location. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's building, he's buying up real estate. Rick Ross, again, Net Worth Music. He's doing the same thing. Another businessman that raps, buying up property. Slim Thug is doing it. Ludacris opened up a restaurant in the airport. Like, people are now understanding. You know what I'm saying? And honestly, it's funny that all of those rappers that I named are from the South. You know what I'm saying? It's like they understand the power of ownership and control. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, Spitta is a great influence, man. Just being independent is like his number one thing. And you see where it got him to where he's a multimillionaire in his young age, is, you know, his early 30s and all this other stuff. And now, you know what I'm saying? He'll be sitting on millions, like his unborn. Like he said, my unborn sitting on millions. I don't even have kids. You know what I'm saying? But they good as soon as they're born. You know what I'm saying? So that's what it's about, man. And Spitta, you know, just shout out to Spitta, man, for sure, man. Like, I'm always singing his praises. He kept it real from day one, and it shows, man. His work shows, like, everything, you know, it just shows that if you're genuine and you stay true to yourself and you work hard and you stay independent, man, it pays off, man. It's a slow grind, for sure. But it took him 10 years, but now, after those 10 years, 10 years plus, because he was with No Limit in 2002, you know what I'm saying? So... just to see that, man, it just shows you, like, just keep at it, man. I remember in an interview he was saying that, you know, it was times when my own niggas was looking at me crazy, like, yo, bro, like, yeah, we dropping all this music, but, like, when the money coming, he's like, yo, man, trust me, the money's gonna come. And as you know, you seen, like, in one of my favorite lines from him is, had you played your role, you would have got your credit at the end of the movie. Listening to them hoes, you on Front Street, swimming in blood-soaked clothes, bitch in the shark, weak hoe, you lunch meat. You know what I'm saying? That's just what it is. Like, instead of holding it down, instead of just staying with the crew, instead of sticking to the plan, you left, you jumped ship on me, and now look. Man. You know what I'm saying? I'm good, and you still looking crazy. Man. You still back at square one. You should have just stayed down, man. Like, I never led you astray. It's just that, yes, when you see me turning down a $1 million deal, it's not because I don't want $1 million. It's because I don't want $1 million that way.
Or, you know, you're worth more than that $1 million. And I think that's the most, that's probably the biggest thing. That's one thing I want a lot of people to get. I mean, whether you're an athlete, whether you're an entertainer, whether you're a CPA, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a teacher, there's so much more value in you than your salary, so much more value in whatever some kind of contract they're going to try to give you. I mean, you could start your own school if you're a teacher. You could start your own firm if you're a lawyer. You could start your own practice if you're a doctor. And there's so much more wealth and ownership owning your own firm, owning your own practice, owning the real estate that practice runs out of, and then leasing it out to other tenants. There's so much more opportunity out there than just being a pawn in the big game. So,
facts.
Two quick questions. What's your favorite book?
Right now, Black America, Inc., Trillion Dollar Nation.
I like it, man. I like that.
But, you know, bias aside, I'm definitely digging Basic Economics from Thomas Sowell. That definitely spoke to me. You know what I mean? Just, I like educational pieces. I like things that that resonate with me. So Thomas Sowell's work, yeah, for sure.
I like that. I mean, first and foremost, I like your first answer, just because one thing that I've noticed just in studying millionaires is millionaires always, they indulge in their own products. So if you see Rick Ross, he's drinking his own champagne. If you see DJ Khaled, he's smoking his own cigars. They're listening to their own music. So it's like when you're a producer, you get to live off of what you create. So, I mean,
yo,
I think that's
a profound point. Because I was telling my friends that it's like, if you like it, own it. So I always give this example. Wiz Khalifa. You know what I'm saying? Wiz Khalifa, as we know, is a world-renowned stoner, and we know that. And he's a millionaire, meaning that he could buy Bud, you know what I'm saying, for the rest of his life and never be, you know, have a drought. But instead, he created his own strains. So now, every time he rolls up, every time he smokes a doobie, that's promo. He was out and TMZ caught him out in public, and he had a jar of the KK. You know, it's legal out in Cali. And he just gave free KK. That's the, you know, Khalifa Kush. He gave Khalifa Kush free to the TMZ people. You know why? Because they're going to put that on a television show, and they're going to talk about a strain, and everybody that's in California is going to flock to the dispensary and smoke more Wiz Khalifa's Kush. Same thing with Spitta. Spitta got his own strain. Ralph Lauren, think about it. You think Ralph Lauren pays for clothes? No. Like, he doesn't. He was a fashion guy. He likes to get dressed. So I'm going to create a fashion house to where I never have to pay for another piece of clothing. Every time I wear my clothes, it's advertisement. I'm going to make more money because they see me in it. So if you like it, man, own it and control it.
And it's kind of crazy because it's like you eliminate an expense as well. Because it's like you're going to spend weed, spend money on marijuana, spend money on clothes, spend money on all that stuff anyway. So it's like not only are you increasing your wealth or increasing your income, but you're decreasing a probably just significant expense. It's like if you're a home builder and you build your own home, but you still sell homes, you've eliminated an entire housing expense. So I mean, that's just a bar in itself, just to kind of focus. It's like they say, like, producers get rich and consumers get poor. So we need to produce more and consume less. Last question is, what does wealth mean to you?
Wealth means freedom. Wealth means freedom. That's the number one word association, you know, freedom. Wealth means that you are not stressing over finances whatsoever. Wealth means that you're free to move about this planet the way you would like to. Even with adversities that come up, because let's be honest, even in your field, I'm pretty sure there's some roadblocks or some obstacles that happen, even with you building wealth. But as you know, man, the doors open up a little bit more easier when you have wealth. And every time that I've seen a wealthy person, I've seen I've seen their freedom. I've seen their ability to take a month-long vacation and or go to another country and learn another language, or, you know, be able to manage their funds or manage their companies from remotely, you know, from a beach if they wanted to. Wealth is freedom to me, man. Like, that's all it means is to me. It's just being able to do what you want, when you want, how you want, and where you want.
Nice. So, I mean, I definitely appreciate you making your time to be on this podcast. We talked about it last week, and then I kind of hit you up today, and you were just, like, super about it. So I appreciate that. I also appreciate you staying up late to talk to the people. It's midnight on your end of the coast, so.
yeah, man. This is my thing, man. I love this. I stayed up late writing the book, so I'm going to definitely stay up late to talk about it in this because I appreciate you, man, like the social circle that you introduced me to, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to get too specific, but like, you know what we into, and it's like just, you know, being able to get that game from you guys, like just the, like even, I'll give you another thing that you do, man, those posters that you've been making, oh my God, man, those are so dope, and I've seen that because, you know, a lot of those other Instagram pages do that, you know, with somebody in a Lamborghini and they have a caption on it. Like, people like me, that does motivate us. I know a lot of people think that's superficial and stuff like that. Like, nah, show me the Audemars, bro, and put a nice quote on there and show me that it, this ain't free. You know what I'm saying? It's going to take some work, but like those things motivate me. And, you know, having people like you in my social circle, and I can actually call you and I can actually get advice. I can actually give advice or whatever, just to have that, man, that means the world to me. You know what I'm saying? It's one of the first things that I learned is it's not what you know, it's who you know. Yep. In a lot of cases. So the fact that I have, you know, people like you and your caliber of expertise, and, you know, and all of those things, it's a blessing to me, man, just to even know you. And that means a lot. So, you know, thank you, man.
So where can they get the book?
Amazon.com, man. Go to Amazon.com, type in Black American Ink. It's right there. All of the people who have read the book, please leave a review. That does, you know, a great service to it. You know what I'm saying? Please leave a review. But, yeah, go to Amazon.com and get yourself a copy of Black American Ink and A Trillion Dollar Nation. It even has a wealth building budget in there to where, you know, you can get yourself right with your paycheck today. You know what I'm saying? That's my word. So get Black American Ink, A Trillion Dollar Nation.
And where else can they find you on the internet or get in contact with you?
Yes, on Twitter, I'm Doedoobs, Doedoobs. Follow and subscribe to my podcast, The Intelligent Rebel Squadcast. Follow and subscribe to my other podcast, The Money Talks Podcast. In that podcast, we just talk about economic empowerment. You know what I'm saying? Side hustles, entrepreneurship, saving and investing. You know, I'm probably going to double back and get you on that podcast too. You know what I'm saying? Just to get you to lend an ear and some bars on there. Hotep Nation, if you guys want to build yourself up, build your community up, and, you know, you're self-sufficient and, you know, you're proud of who you are and you know yourself, you love yourself, and you want to just do better, go to hotepnation.com/recruiting. We would love to have you on board. We're doing major things in the community. We're doing major things for ourselves. So please, if you have it in you and you think you can contribute something to Hotep and have Hotep contribute to you, rock with hotepnation.com.
Nice. Again, I appreciate you being on the show. People, this is Top Millionaire. This is episode 15. We had a great podcast, man. It was fire. This is longer than anyone that we've done, but it was just so like power-packed, just content-filled, so I appreciate it. Appreciate you all for tuning in. If you're interested in joining any of our programs, the Todd Capital Investment Club is booming. We're doing some crazy things. Not only are we investing in the stock market, we're looking at a lot of other opportunities. They're going to bring some cash flow in, some rental properties, some business acquisitions, some real money-making stuff. So, I mean, if you're interested in doing that, email us at info@capitaltod.com. In addition, we also have the Todd Capital Investment Club for Real Estate, same exact type program. And you can email the same email to get involved with that. That's info@capitaltod.com. And lastly, we still have Todd University going on. We are in our first session right now, but we're actually going to kick it back up. So, I mean, get on the signing, get on the waiting list if you're interested in doing it. Right now, it's only going to be discounted at $50 for so long. So, I highly recommend you get involved now before it gets too late and before we have to bump it up to the real price. So if you are interested in joining that club, email us at university@capitaltod.com. You can find me on the internet, at Top Millionaire on Twitter, at Top Millionaire on Instagram, and anywhere else on the internet you can find me. I'm out there putting out as much content as I can, trying to help people, trying to shift the culture. So that's what we're going to do, because it's not if, it's when. So again, thank you for tuning in. This is Top Millionaire signing off.